control of Jephthah, and Jephthah went through Gilead and Manasseh, raising an army. Finally he arrived in Mizpah in Gilead, where he promised the Lord, "If you will let me defeat the Ammonites and come home safely, I will sacrifice to you whoever comes out to meet me first." From Mizpah, Jephthah attacked the Ammonites, and the Lord helped him defeat them. Jephthah and his army destroyed the 20 towns between Aroer and Minnith, and others as far as Abel-Keramim. After that, the Ammonites could not invade Israel anymore. Jephthah's daughter. When Jephthah returned to his home in Mizpah, the first one to meet him was his daughter. She was playing a tambourine and dancing to celebrate his victory, and she was his only child. "Oh," Jephthah cried. Then he tore his clothes in sorrow and said to his daughter, "I made a sacred promise to the Lord, and I must keep it. Your coming out to meet me has broken my heart." "Father," she said, "you made a sacred promise to the Lord, and he let you defeat the Ammonites. Now you must do what you promised, even if it means I must die. But first, please let me spend 2 months wandering in the hill country with my friends. We will cry together, because I can never get married and have children."
"Yes, you may have 2 months," Jephthah said. She and some other girls left, and for 2 months they wandered in the hill country, crying because she could never get married and have children. Then she went back to her father. He did what he had promised, and she never got married. That's why every year Israelite girls walk around for 4 days, weeping for Jephthah's daughter.
The Ephraim tribe fights Jephthah's army. Chapter 12. The men of the Ephraim tribe got together an army and went across the Jordan River to Zaphon to meet with Jephthah. They said, "Why did you go to war with the Ammonites without asking us to help? Just for that, we're going to burn down your house with you inside." "But I did ask for your help," Jephthah answered. "That was back when the people of Gilead and I were having trouble with the Ammonites, and you wouldn't do a thing to help us. So when we realized you weren't coming, we risked our lives and attacked the Ammonites, and the Lord let us defeat them. There's no reason for you to come here today to attack me." But the men from Ephraim said, "You people of Gilead are nothing more than refugees from Ephraim. You even live on land that belongs to the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh." So Jephthah called together the army of Gilead. Then they attacked and defeated the army from Ephraim. The army of Gilead also posted guards at all the places where the soldiers from Ephraim could cross the Jordan River to return to their own land. Whenever one of the men from Ephraim would try to cross the river, the guards would say, "Are you from Ephraim?" "No," the man would answer, "I'm not from Ephraim." The guards would then tell them to say Shibboleth, because they knew that people of Ephraim could say Sibboleth, but not Shibboleth. If the man said Sibboleth, the guards would grab him and kill him right there. Altogether, 42,000 men from Ephraim were killed in the battle and at the Jordan. Jephthah was a leader of Israel for 6 years before he died and was buried in his hometown Mizpah, in Gilead. Ibzan. Ibzan, the next leader of Israel, came from Bethlehem. He had 30 daughters and 30 sons, and he let them all marry outside his clan. Ibzan was a leader for 7 years before he died and was buried in Bethlehem. Elon. Elon from the Zebulun tribe was the next leader of Israel. He was a leader for 10 years, before he died and was buried in Ajalon, that belonged to the Zebulun tribe. Abdon.
Abdon, the son of Hillel, was the next leader of Israel. He had 40 sons and 30 grandsons, and each one of them had his own donkey. Abdon was a leader for 8 years before he died and was buried in his hometown of Pirathon, which is located in the part of the hill country of Ephraim where Amalekites used to live. Samson is born. Chapter 13.
Once again the Israelites started disobeying the Lord. So he let the Philistines take control of Israel for 40 years. Manoah, from the tribe of Dan, lived in the town of Zorah. His wife was not able to have children, but one day an angel from the Lord appeared to her and said, "You have never been able to have any children, but very soon you will be pregnant and have a son. He will belong to God from the day he is born, so his hair must never be cut. And even before he is born, you must not drink any wine or beer or eat any food forbidden by God's laws. Your son will begin to set Israel free from the Philistines." She went to Manoah and said, "A prophet who looked like an angel of God came and talked to me. I was so frightened that I didn't even ask where he was from. He didn't tell me his name, but he did say that I'm going to have a baby boy. I'm not supposed to drink any wine or beer or eat any food forbidden by God's laws. Our son will belong to God for as long as he lives." Then Manoah prayed, "Our Lord, please send that prophet again, and let him tell us what to do for the son we are going to have." God answered Manoah's prayer, and the angel went back to Manoah's wife while she was resting in the fields. Manoah wasn't there at the time. So she found him and said, "That same man is here again. He's the one I saw the other day." Manoah went with his wife and asked the man, "Are you the one who spoke to my wife?" "Yes, I am," he answered. Manoah then asked, "When your promise comes true, what rules must he obey, and what will be his work?" "Your wife must be careful to do everything I told her," the Lord's angel answered. "She must not eat or drink anything made from grapes. She must not drink wine or beer or eat anything forbidden by God's laws. I told her exactly what to do." "Please," Manoah said, "stay here with us for just a little while, and we'll fix a young goat for you to eat." Manoah didn't realize that he was really talking to one of the Lord's angels. The angel answered, "I can stay for a little while, although I won't eat any of your food. But if you would like to offer the goat as a sacrifice to the Lord, that would be fine." Manoah said, "Tell us your name, so we can honor you after our son is born." "No," the angel replied, "you don't need to know my name, and if you did, you couldn't understand it." So Manoah took a young goat over to a large rock he had chosen for an altar, and he built a fire on the rock. Then he killed the goat and offered it with some grain as a sacrifice to the Lord. But then an amazing thing happened. The fire blazed up toward the sky, and the Lord's angel went up toward heaven in the fire. Manoah and his wife bowed down low when they saw what happened. The angel was gone, but Manoah and his wife realized that he was one of the Lord's angels. Manoah said, "We have seen an angel. Now we're going to die."
"The Lord isn't going to kill us," Manoah's wife responded. "The Lord accepted our sacrifice and grain offering, and he let us see something amazing. Besides, he told us that we're going to have a son."
Later, Manoah's wife did give birth to a son, and she named him Samson. As the boy grew, the Lord blessed him. Then, while Samson was staying at Dan's camp between the towns of Zorah and Eshtaol, the Spirit of the Lord took control of him. Samson gets married. Chapter 14. One day, Samson went to Timnah,
where he saw a Philistine woman. When he got back home, he told his parents, "I saw a Philistine woman in Timnah, and I want to marry her. Get her for me." His parents answered, "There are a lot of women in our clan, and even more in the rest of Israel. Those Philistines are pagans. Why would you want to marry one of their women?"
"She looks good to me," Samson answered. "Get her for me." At that time, the Philistines were in control of Israel, and the Lord wanted to stir up trouble for them. That's why he made Samson desire that woman. As Samson and his parents reached the vineyards near Timnah, a fierce young lion suddenly roared and attacked Samson. But the Lord's Spirit took control of Samson, and with his bare hands he tore the lion apart, as though it had been a young goat. His parents didn't know what he had done, and he didn't tell them. When they got to Timnah, Samson talked to the woman, and he was sure that she was the one for him. Later, Samson returned to Timnah for the wedding, and when he came near the place where the lion had attacked, he left the road to see what was left of the lion. He was surprised to see that bees were living in the lion's skeleton, and that they had made some honey. He scooped up the honey in his hands and ate some of it as he walked along. When he got back to his parents, he gave them some of the honey, and they ate it too. But he didn't tell them he had found the honey in the skeleton of a lion. While Samson's father went to make the final arrangements with the bride and her family, Samson threw a big party, as grooms usually did. When the Philistines saw what Samson was like, they told 30 of their young men to stay with him at the party. Samson told the 30 young men, "This party will last for 7 days. Let's make a bet. I'll tell you a riddle, and if you can tell me the right answer before the party is over, I'll give each one of you a shirt and a full change of clothing. But if you can't tell me the answer, then each of you will have to give me a shirt and a full change of clothing." "It's a bet," the Philistines said. "Tell us the riddle." Samson said, "Once so strong and mighty, now so sweet and tasty." 3 days went by, and the Philistine young men had not come up with the right answer. Finally, on the 7th day of the party, they went to Samson's bride and said, "You had better trick your husband into telling you the answer to his riddle. Have you invited us here just to rob us? If you don't find out the answer, we will burn you and your family to death." Samson's bride went to him and started crying in his arms. "You must really hate me," she sobbed. "If you loved me at all, you would have told me the answer to your riddle." "But I haven't even told my parents the answer," Samson replied. "Why should I tell you?" For the entire 7 days of the party, she had been whining and trying to get the answer from him. But that 7th day, she put so much pressure on Samson that he finally gave in and told her the answer. She went straight to the young men and told them. Before sunset that day, the men of the town went to Samson with this answer. "A lion is the strongest. Honey is the sweetest." Samson replied, "This answer you have given me doubtless came from my bride-to-be." Then the Lord's Spirit took control of Samson. He went to Ashkelon, where he killed 30 men and took their clothing. Samson then gave it to the 30 young men at Timnah and stormed back home to his own family. The father of the bride had Samson's wife marry one of the 30 young men that had been at Samson's party. Chapter 15. Later, during the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit the young woman he thought was still his wife. He brought along a young goat as a gift and said to her father, "I want to go into my wife's bedroom." "You can't do that," he replied. "When you left, the way you did, I thought you were divorcing her, so I arranged for her to marry one of the young men who are at your party. But my younger daughter is even prettier, and you can have her as your wife. This time, Samson answered, I have a good reason for really hurting some Philistines. Samson takes revenge. Samson went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them together in pairs with oil-soaked rags around their tails. Then Samson took the foxes into the Philistine wheat fields that were ready to be harvested. He set the rags on fire and let the foxes go. The wheat fields went up in flames, and so did the stacks of wheat that had already been cut. Even the Philistine vineyards and olive orchards burned. Some of the Philistines started asking around, "Who could have done such a thing?" "It was Samson," someone told them. "He married the daughter of that man in Timnah, but then the man gave Samson's wife to one of the men at the wedding." The Philistine leaders went to Timnah and burned to death Samson's wife and her father. When Samson found out what they had done, he went to them and said, "You killed them, and I won't rest until I get even with you." Then Samson started hacking them to pieces with his sword. Samson left Philistia and went to live in the cave at Etam Rock. But it wasn't long before the Philistines invaded Judah and set up a huge army camp at Jawbone. The people of Judah asked, "Why have you invaded our land?" The Philistines answered, "We've come to get Samson. We're going to do the same things to him that he did to our people." 3,000 men from Judah went to the cave at Etam Rock and said to Samson, "Don't you know that the Philistines rule us, and they will punish us for what you did?" "I was only getting even with them," Samson replied. "They did the same things to me first." "We came here to tie you up and turn you over to them," said the men of Judah. "I won't put up a fight," Samson answered, "but you have to promise not to hurt me yourselves." "We promise," the men said. "We will only tie you up and turn you over to the Philistines. We won't kill you." Then they tied up his hands and arms with 2 brand new ropes and led him away from Etam Rock. When the Philistines saw that Samson was being brought to their camp at Jawbone, they started shouting and ran toward him. But the Lord's Spirit took control of Samson, and Samson broke the ropes as though they were pieces of burnt cloth. Samson glanced around and spotted the jawbone of a donkey. The jawbone had not yet dried out, so it was still hard and heavy. Samson grabbed it and started hitting Philistines. He killed 1,000 of them. After the fighting was over, he made up this poem about what he had done to the Philistines. "I used a donkey's jawbone to kill 1,000 men. I beat them with this jawbone over and over again." Samson tossed the jawbone on the ground and decided to call the place Jawbone Hill. It is still called that today. Samson was so thirsty that he prayed, "Our Lord, you helped me win a battle against a whole army. Please don't let me die of thirst now. Those heathen Philistines will carry off my dead body." Samson was tired and weary, but God sent water gushing from a rock. Samson drank some and felt strong again. Samson named the place Caller Spring, because he had called out to God for help. The spring is still there at Jawbone. Samson was a leader of Israel for 20 years, but the Philistines were still the rulers of Israel. Samson carries off the gates of Gaza. Chapter 16. One day, while Samson was in Gaza, he saw a prostitute and went to her house to spend the night.
The people who lived in Gaza found out he was there, and they decided to kill him at sunrise. So they went to the city gate and waited all night in the guardrooms on each side of the gate. But Samson got up in the middle of the night and went to the town gate. He pulled the gate doors and doorposts out of the wall and put them on his shoulders. Then he carried them all the way to the top of the hill that overlooks Hebron, where he set the doors down, still closed and locked. Delilah tricks Samson. Sometime later, Samson fell in love with a woman named Delilah, who lived in Sorek Valley. The Philistine rulers went to Delilah and said, "Trick Samson into telling you what makes him so strong and what can make him weak. Then we can tie him up so he can't get away. If you find out his secret, we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver." The next time Samson was at Delilah's house, she asked, "Samson, what makes you so strong? How can I tie you up so you can't get away? Come on, you can tell me." Samson answered, "If someone ties me up with 7 new bowstrings that have never been dried, it will make me just as weak as anyone else." The Philistine rulers gave 7 new bowstrings to Delilah. They also told some of their soldiers to go to Delilah's house and hide in the room where Samson and Delilah were. If the bowstrings made Samson weak, they would be able to capture him. Delilah tied up Samson with the bowstrings and shouted, "Samson, the Philistines are attacking!" Samson snapped the bowstrings as though they were pieces of scorch string. The Philistines had not found out why Samson was so strong. "You lied and made me look like a fool," Delilah said. "Now tell me, how can I really tie you up?"
Samson answered, "Use some new ropes. If I'm tied up with ropes that have never been used, I'll be just as weak as anyone else." Delilah got new ropes and again had some Philistines hide in the room. Then she tied up Samson's arms and shouted,
"Samson, the Philistines are attacking!"
Samson snapped the ropes as if they were threads.
"You're still lying and making a fool of me," Delilah said. "Tell me how I can tie you up."
"My hair is in 7 braids," Samson replied. "If you weave my braids into the threads on a loom and nail the loom to a wall, then I will be as weak as anyone else." While Samson was asleep, Delilah wove his braids into the threads on a loom and nailed the loom to a wall. Then she shouted, "Samson, the Philistines are attacking!" Samson woke up and pulled the loom free from its posts in the ground and from the nails in the wall. Then he pulled his hair free from the woven cloth.
"Samson," Delilah said, "you claim to love me, but you don't mean it. You've made me look like a fool 3 times now, and you still haven't told me why you are so strong."
Delilah started nagging and pestering him day after day until he couldn't stand it any longer. Finally, Samson told her the truth. "I have belonged to God ever since I was born, so my hair has never been cut. If it were cut off, my strength would leave me, and I would be as weak as anyone else." Delilah realized that he was telling the truth, so she sent someone to tell the Philistine rulers,
"Come to my house one more time. Samson has finally told me the truth."
The Philistine rulers went to Delilah's house, and they brought along the silver they had promised her. Delilah had lulled Samson to sleep with his head resting in her lap. She signaled to one of the Philistine men as she began cutting off Samson's 7 braids. And by the time she was finished, Samson's strength was gone. Delilah tied him up and shouted,
"Samson, the Philistines are attacking!"
Samson woke up and thought, "I'll break loose and escape, just as I always do."
He did not realize that the Lord had stopped helping him. The Philistines grabbed Samson and poked out his eyes. They took him to the prison in Gaza and chained him up. Then they put him to work, turning a millstone to grind grain. But they didn't cut his hair any more, so it started growing back. The Philistine rulers threw a big party and sacrificed a lot of animals to their god Dagon. The rulers said, "Samson was our enemy, but our god Dagon helped us capture him." Everyone there was having a good time, and they shouted, "Bring out Samson, he's still good for a few more laughs." The rulers had Samson brought from the prison, and when the people saw him, this is how they praised their god. "Samson ruined our crops and killed our people. He was our enemy, but our god helped us capture him." They made fun of Samson for a while. Then they told him to stand near the columns that supported the roof. A young man was leading Samson by the hand, and Samson said to him, "I need to lean against something. Take me over to the columns that hold up the roof." The Philistine rulers were celebrating in a temple packed with people and with 3,000 more on the flat roof. They had all been watching Samson and making fun of him. Samson prayed, "Please remember me, Lord God. The Philistines poked out my eyes, but make me strong one last time, so I can take revenge for at least one of my eyes." Samson was standing between the two middle columns that held up the roof. He felt around and found one column with his right hand, and the other with his left hand. Then he shouted, "Let me die with the Philistines." He pushed against the columns as hard as he could, and the temple collapsed, with the Philistine rulers and everyone else still inside. Samson killed more Philistines when he died than he had killed during his entire life. His brothers and the rest of his family went to Gaza and took his body back home. They buried him in his father's tomb, which was located between Zorah and Eshtaol. Samson was a leader of Israel for 20 years. Micah makes idols and hires a priest. Chapter 17. Micah belonged to the Ephraim tribe and lived in the hill country. One day he told his mother, "Do you remember those 1,100 pieces of silver that were stolen from you? I was there when you put a curse on whoever stole them. Well, I'm the one who did it." His mother answered, "I pray that the Lord will bless you, my son." Micah returned the silver to his mother, and she said, "I give this silver to the Lord, so my son can use it to make an idol." Turning to her son, she said, "Micah, now the silver belongs to you." But Micah handed it back to his mother. She took 200 pieces of the silver and gave them to a silver worker, who made them into an idol. They kept the idol in Micah's house. He had a shrine for worshiping God there at his home, and he had made some idols and a sacred priestly vest. Micah chose one of his own sons to be the priest for his shrine. This was before kings ruled Israel, so all the Israelites did whatever they thought was right. One day, a young Levite came to Micah's house in the hill country of Ephraim. He had been staying with one of the clans of Judah in Bethlehem, but he had left Bethlehem to find a new place to live where he could be a priest. "Where are you from?" Micah asked. "I am a Levite from Bethlehem in Judah," the man answered, "and I'm on my way to find a new place to live." Micah said, "Why don't you stay here with me? You can be my priest, and tell me what God wants me to do. Every year I'll give you 10 pieces of silver and one complete set of clothes, and I'll provide all your food." The young man went for a walk. Then he agreed to stay with Micah and be his priest. He lived in Micah's house, and Micah treated him like one of his own sons. Micah said, I have a Levite as my own priest. Now I know that the Lord will be kind to me.
Chapter 18. These things happened before kings ruled Israel. The tribe of Dan takes Micah's priest and idols. About this time, the tribe of Dan was looking for a place to live. The other tribes had land, but the people of Dan did not really have any to call their own. The tribe chose 5 warriors to represent their clans and told them, "Go and find some land where we can live." The warriors left the area of Zorah and Eshtaol and went into the hill country of Ephraim. One night they stayed at Micah's house because they heard the young Levite talking, and they knew from his accent that he was from the south. They asked him, "What are you doing here? Who brought you here?" The Levite replied, "Micah hired me as his priest." Then he told them how well Micah had treated him. "Please talk to God for us," the men said. "Ask God if we will be successful in what we are trying to do." "Don't worry," answered the priest. "The Lord is pleased with what you are doing." The 5 men left and went to the town of Laish, whose people were from Sidon. But Sidon was too far away to protect them. Even though their town had no walls, the people thought they were safe from attack. So they had not asked anyone else for protection, which meant that the tribe of Dan could easily take over Laish. The 5 men went back to Zorah and Eshtaol, where their relatives asked, "Did you find any land?" "Let's go," the 5 men said. "We saw some very good land with enough room for all of us, and it has everything we will ever need. What are you waiting for? Let's attack and take it. You'll find that the people think they're safe, but God is giving the land to us." 600 men from the tribe of Dan strapped on their weapons and left Zorah and Eshtaol with their families. One night, they camped near Kiriath Jearim in the territory of Judah. And that's why the place just west of Kiriath Jearim is still known as Dan's camp. Then they went into the hill country of Ephraim. When they came close to Micah's house, the 5 men who had been spies asked the other warriors, "Did you know that someone in this village has several idols and a sacred priestly vest? What do you think we should do about it?" The 600 warriors left the road and went to the house on Micah's property where the young Levite priest lived. They stood at the gate and greeted the priest. Meanwhile, the 5 men who had been there before went into Micah's house and took the sacred priestly vest and the idols. "Hey!" the priest shouted. "What do you think you're doing?" "Quiet," the men said. "Keep your mouth shut and listen. Why don't you come with us and be our priest, so you can tell us what God wants us to do? You could stay here and be a priest for one man's family, but wouldn't you rather be the priest for a clan, or even a whole tribe of Israel?" The priest really liked that idea. So he took the vest and the idols and joined the others from the tribe of Dan. Then they turned and left, after putting their children, their cattle, and the rest of their other possessions in front. They had traveled for some time before Micah asked his neighbors to help him get his things back. He and his men caught up with the people of Dan and shouted for them to stop. They turned to face him and asked, "What's wrong? Why did you bring all these men?" Micah answered, "You know what's wrong. You stole the gods I made and you took my priest. I don't have anything left." "We don't want to hear any more about it," the people of Dan said. "And if you make us angry, you'll only get yourself and your family killed." After saying this, they turned and left. Micah realized there was no way he could win a fight with them, and so he went back home. The tribe of Dan captures Laish. The tribe of Dan took Micah's priest and the things Micah had made and headed for Laish, which was located in a valley controlled by the town of Beth-Rehob.
Laish was defenseless, because it had no walls and was too far from Sidon for the Sidonians to help defend it. The leaders of Laish had not even asked nearby towns to help them in case of an attack. The warriors from Dan made a surprise attack on Laish, killing everyone and burning it down. Then they rebuilt the town and settled there themselves. But they named it Dan after one of Israel's sons, who was the ancestor of their tribe. Even though the place of worship was in Shiloh, the people of Dan set up the idol Micah had made. They worshipped the idol, and the Levite was their priest. His name was Jonathan, and he was a descendant of Gershom, the son of Moses. His descendants served as priests for the tribe of Dan, until the people of Israel were taken away as prisoners by their enemies. A woman is murdered. Chapter 19. Before kings ruled Israel, a Levite was living deep in the hill country of the Ephraim tribe. He married a woman from Bethlehem in Judah, but she was unfaithful and went back to live with her family in Bethlehem. 4 months later, her husband decided to try and talk her into coming back. So he went to Bethlehem, taking along a servant and 2 donkeys. He talked with his wife, and she invited him into her family's home. Her father was glad to see him, and did not want him to leave. So the man stayed 3 days, eating and drinking with his father-in-law. When everyone got up on the 4th day, the Levite started getting ready to go home. But his father-in-law said, "Don't leave until you have a bite to eat. You'll need strength for your journey." The 2 men sat down together and ate a big meal. "Come on," the man's father-in-law said. "Stay tonight and have a good time." The Levite tried to leave, but his father-in-law insisted, and he spent 1 more night. The 5th day, the man got up early to leave, but his wife's father said, "You need to keep up your strength. Why don't you leave right after lunch?" So the 2 of them started eating. Finally, the Levite got up from the meal so he and his wife and servant could leave. "Look," his father-in-law said, "it's already late afternoon, and if you leave now, you won't get very far before dark. Stay with us 1 more night and enjoy yourself. Then you can get up early tomorrow morning and start home." But the Levite decided not to spend the night there again. He had the saddles put on his 2 donkeys. Then he and his wife and servant traveled as far as Jebus, which is now called Jerusalem. It was beginning to get dark, and the man's servant said, "Let's stop and spend the night in this town where the Jebusites live." "No," the Levite answered. "They aren't Israelites, and I refuse to spend the night there. We'll stop for the night at Gibeah, because we can make it to Gibeah, or maybe even to Ramah, before dark." They walked on and reached Gibeah, in the territory of Benjamin, just after sunset. They left the road and went into Gibeah. But the Levite couldn't find a house where anyone would let them spend the night, and they sat down in the open area just inside the town gates. Soon an old man came in through the gates on his way home from working in the fields. Most of the people who lived in Gibeah belonged to the tribe of Benjamin, but this man was originally from the hill country of Ephraim. He noticed that the Levite was just in town to spend the night. "Where are you going?" the old man asked. "Where did you come from?" "We've come from Bethlehem in Judah," the Levite answered. "We went there on a visit. Now we're going to the place where the Lord is worshipped, and later we will return to our home in the hill country of Ephraim. But no one here will let us spend the night in their home. We brought food for our donkeys and bread and wine for ourselves, so we don't need anything except a place to sleep." The old man said, "You are welcome to spend the night in my home and to be my guest, but don't stay out here." The old man brought them into his house and fed their donkeys. Then he and his guests washed their feet and began eating and drinking. They were having a good time
when some worthless men of that town surrounded the house and started banging on the door and shouting, "A man came to your house tonight. Send him out so we can have sex with him." The old man went outside and said, "My friends, please don't commit such a horrible crime against a man who is a guest in my house. Let me send out my daughter instead. She's a virgin, and I'll even send out the man's wife. You can rape them or do whatever else you want, but please don't do such a horrible thing to this man." The men refused to listen. So the Levite grabbed his wife and shoved her outside. The men raped her and abused her all night long. Finally, they let her go just before sunrise, and it was almost daybreak when she went back to the house where her husband was staying. She collapsed at the door and lay there until sunrise. About that time, her husband woke up and got ready to leave. He opened the door and went outside, where he found his wife lying at the door with her hands on the doorstep. "Get up," he said. "It's time to leave." But his wife didn't move. He lifted her body onto his donkey and left. When he got home, he took a butcher knife and cut her body into 12 pieces. Then he told some messengers, "Take one piece to each tribe of Israel and ask everyone if anything like this has ever happened since Israel left Egypt. Tell them to think about it, talk it over, and tell us what should be done." Everyone who saw a piece of the body said, "This is horrible. Nothing like this has ever happened since the day Israel left Egypt." Israel gets ready for war. Chapter 20. The Israelites called a meeting of the nation, and since they were God's people, the meeting was held at the place of worship in Mizpah. Men who could serve as soldiers came from everywhere in Israel, from Dan in the north, Beersheba in the south, and Gilead east of the Jordan River. 400,000 of them came to Mizpah, and they each felt the same about what those men from the tribe of Benjamin had done. News about the meeting at Mizpah reached the tribe of Benjamin. As soon as the leaders of the tribes of Israel took their places, the Israelites said, "How could such a horrible thing happen?" The husband of the murdered woman answered, "My wife and I went into the town of Gibeah in Benjamin to spend the night. Later that night, the men of Gibeah surrounded the house. They wanted to kill me, but instead they raped and killed my wife. It was a terrible thing for Israelites to do, so I cut up her body and sent pieces everywhere in Israel. You are the people of Israel, and you must decide today what to do about the men of Gibeah." The whole army was in agreement, and they said, "None of us will go home. We'll send 1/10 of the men from each tribe to get food for the army. And we'll ask God who should attack Gibeah, because those men deserve to be punished for committing such a horrible crime in Israel." Everyone agreed that Gibeah had to be punished. The tribes of Israel sent messengers to every town and village in Benjamin, and wherever the messengers went, they said, "How could those worthless men in Gibeah do such a disgusting thing? We can't allow such a terrible crime to go unpunished in Israel. Hand the men over to us, and we will put them to death." But the people of Benjamin refused to listen to the other Israelites. Men from towns all over Benjamin's territory went to Gibeah and got ready to fight Israel. The Benjamin tribe had 26,000 soldiers, not counting the 700 who were Gibeah's best warriors. In this army, there were 700 left-handed experts who could sling a rock at a target the size of a hare and hit it every time. The other Israelite tribes organized their army and found they had 400,000 experienced soldiers. So they went to the place of worship at Bethel and asked God, "Which tribe should be the first to attack the people of Benjamin?" "Judah," the Lord answered. The next morning, the Israelite army moved its camp to a place near Gibeah. Then they left their camp
and got into position to attack the army of Benjamin. The war between Israel and Benjamin. Benjamin's soldiers came out of Gibeah and attacked, and when the day was over, 22,000 Israelite soldiers lay dead on the ground. The people of Israel went to the place of worship and cried until sunset. Then they asked the Lord, "Should we attack the people of Benjamin again, even though they are our relatives?" "Yes," the Lord replied, "attack them again." The Israelite soldiers encouraged each other to be brave and to fight hard. Then the next day they went back to Gibeah and took up the same positions as they had before. That same day, Benjamin's soldiers came out of Gibeah and attacked, leaving another 18,000 Israelite soldiers dead on the battlefield. The people of Israel went to the place of worship at Bethel, where the sacred chest was being kept. They sat on the ground, crying and not eating for the rest of the day. Then about sunset, they offered sacrifices to please the Lord and to ask his blessing. Phinehas the priest then prayed, "Our Lord, the people of Benjamin are our relatives. Should we stop fighting or attack them again?" "Attack," the Lord answered. "Tomorrow I will let you defeat them." The Israelites surrounded Gibeah, but stayed where they could not be seen. Then the next day they took the same positions as twice before, but this time they had a different plan. They said, "When the men of Benjamin attack, we will run off and let them chase us away from the town and into the country roads." The soldiers of Benjamin attacked the Israelite army and started pushing it back from the town. They killed about 30 Israelites in the fields and along the road between Gibeah and Bethel. The men of Benjamin were thinking, "We're mowing them down like we did before." The Israelites were running away, but they headed for Baal Tamar, where they regrouped. They had set an ambush, and they were sure it would work. 10,000 of Israel's best soldiers had been hiding west of Gibeah, and as soon as the men of Benjamin chased the Israelites into the countryside, these 10,000 soldiers made a surprise attack on the town gates. They dashed in and captured Gibeah, killing everyone there. Then they set the town on fire, because the smoke would be the signal for the other Israelite soldiers to turn and attack the soldiers of Benjamin. The fighting had been so heavy around the soldiers of Benjamin that they did not know the trouble they were in. But then they looked back and saw clouds of smoke rising from the town. They looked in front and saw the soldiers of Israel turning to attack. This terrified them because they realized that something horrible was happening, and it was horrible. Over 25,000 soldiers of Benjamin died that day, and those who were left alive knew that the Lord had given Israel the victory. The men of Benjamin headed down the road toward the desert, trying to escape from the Israelites. But the Israelites stayed right behind them, keeping up their attack. Men even came out of the nearby towns to help kill the men of Benjamin, who were having to fight on all sides. The Israelite soldiers never let up their attack. They chased and killed the warriors of Benjamin as far as a place directly east of Gibeah, until 18,000 of these warriors lay dead. Some other warriors of Benjamin turned and ran down the road toward Rimmon Rock in the desert. The Israelites killed 5,000 of them on the road, then chased the rest until they had killed 2,000 more. 25,000 soldiers of Benjamin died that day, all of them experienced warriors. Only 600 of them finally made it into the desert to Rimmon Rock, where they stayed for 4 months. The Israelites turned back and went to every town in Benjamin's territory, killing all the people and animals and setting the towns on fire. Wives for the Men of Benjamin. Chapter 21. When the Israelites had met at Mizpah before the war with Benjamin, they had made this sacred promise: "None of us will ever let our daughters marry any man from Benjamin."
After the war with Benjamin, the Israelites went to the place of worship at Bethel and sat there until sunset. They cried loudly and bitterly and prayed, "Our Lord, you are the God of Israel. Why did you let this happen? Now one of our tribes is almost gone." Early the next morning, the Israelites built an altar and offered sacrifices to please the Lord and to ask his blessing. Then they asked each other, "Did any of the tribes of Israel fail to come to the place of worship? We made a sacred promise that anyone who didn't come to the meeting at Mizpah would be put to death." The Israelites were sad about what had happened to the Benjamin tribe, and they said, "One of our tribes was almost wiped out. Only a few men of Benjamin weren't killed in the war. We need to get wives for them, so the tribe won't completely disappear. But how can we do that, after promising in the Lord's name that we wouldn't let them marry any of our daughters?" Again the Israelites asked, "Did any of the tribes stay away from the meeting at Mizpah?" After asking around, they discovered that no one had come from Jabesh in Gilead. So they sent 12,000 warriors with these orders: "Attack Jabesh in Gilead, and kill everyone except the women who have never been married." The warriors attacked Jabesh in Gilead and returned to their camp in Canaan with 400 young women. The Israelites met and sent messengers to the men of Benjamin at Rimmon Rock, telling them that the Israelites were willing to make peace with them. So the men of Benjamin came back from Rimmon Rock, and the Israelites let them marry the young women from Jabesh. But there weren't enough women. The Israelites were very sad, because the Lord had almost wiped out one of their tribes. Then their national leaders said, "All the women of the Benjamin tribe were killed. How can we get wives for the men of Benjamin who are left? If they don't have children, one of the Israelite tribes will die out. But we can't let the men of Benjamin marry any of our daughters. We made a sacred promise not to do that, and if we break our promise, we will be under our own curse." Then someone suggested, "What about the Lord's festival that takes place each year in Shiloh? It's held north of Bethel, south of Libona, and just east of the road that goes from Bethel to Shechem." The leaders told the men of Benjamin, who still did not have wives, "Go to Shiloh and hide in the vineyards near the festival. Wait there for the young women of Shiloh to come out and perform their dances. Then rush out and grab one of the young women, then take her home as your wife. If the fathers or brothers of these women complain about this, we'll say, 'Be kind enough to let those men keep your daughter. After all, we couldn't get enough wives for all the men of Benjamin in the battle at Jabesh. And because you didn't give them permission to marry your daughters, you won't be under the curse we earlier agreed on.'" The men of Benjamin went to Shiloh and hid in the vineyards. The young women soon started dancing, and each man grabbed one of them and carried her off. Then the men of Benjamin went back to their own land and rebuilt their towns and started living in them again. Afterwards, the rest of the Israelites returned to their homes and families. Israel was not ruled by a king. In those days, Israel wasn't ruled by a king, and everyone did what they thought was right.
This ends Judges, narrated by Richard M. Davidson. And now, Ruth, narrated by Suzanne Torin.
Ruth. About this book. The Book of Ruth gives a glimpse into the life of an Israelite family during the period of the Judges. This family later became very important to Israel because one of Ruth's great-grandchildren was King David. In addition to Ruth, the other main character in the book is Naomi. who lived in Bethlehem with her husband and two sons. But the crops failed, and the family moved to the country of Moab. Naomi's husband died, and her sons married Moabite women. Ruth was one of those women. After Naomi's two sons died in Moab, she decided to return to Bethlehem. Naomi told her two daughters-in-law to stay in Moab and find new husbands. But Ruth refused to stay, and instead went to Bethlehem with her. The rest of the book tells how Ruth married a rich relative named Boaz. Ruth is loyal to Naomi. Chapter 1. Before Israel was ruled by kings, Elimelech, from the tribe of Ephrath, lived in the town of Bethlehem. His wife was named Naomi, and their two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. But when their crops failed, they moved to the country of Moab. And while they were there, Elimelech died, leaving Naomi with only her two sons. Later, Naomi's sons married Moabite women. One was named Orpah, and the other, Ruth. About 10 years later, Mahlon and Chilion also died. Now Naomi had no husband or sons. When Naomi heard that the Lord had given his people a good harvest, she and her two daughters-in-law got ready to leave Moab and go to Judah. As they were on their way there, Naomi said to them, "Don't you want to go back home to your own mothers? You were kind to my husband and sons, and you have always been kind to me. I pray that the Lord will be just as kind to you. May he give each of you another husband and a home of your own." Naomi kissed them. They cried and said, "We want to go with you and live among your people." But she replied, "My daughters, why don't you return home? What good will it do you to go with me? Do you think I could have more sons for you to marry? You must go back home, because I am too old to marry again. Even if I got married tonight and later had more sons, would you wait for them to become old enough to marry? No, my daughters. Life is harder for me than it is for you, because the Lord has turned against me." They cried again. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth held on to her. Naomi then said to Ruth, "Look, your sister-in-law is going back to her people and to her gods. Why don't you go with her?" Ruth answered, "Please don't tell me to leave you and return home. I will go where you go. I will live where you live. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. I will die where you die and be buried beside you. May the Lord punish me if we are ever separated, even by death." When Naomi saw that Ruth had made up her mind to go with her, she stopped urging her to go back. They reached Bethlehem, and the whole town was excited to see them. The women who lived there asked, "Can this really be Naomi?" Then she told them, "Don't call me Naomi any longer. Call me Mara, because God has made my life bitter. I had everything when I left, but the Lord has brought me back with nothing. How can you still call me Naomi when God has turned against me and made my life so hard?" The barley harvest was just beginning when Naomi and Ruth, her Moabite daughter-in-law, arrived in Bethlehem. Ruth meets Boaz. Chapter 2. One day Ruth said to Naomi, "Let me see if I can find someone who will let me pick up the grain left in the fields by the harvest workers." Naomi answered, "Go ahead, my daughter." So right away, Ruth went out to pick up grain in a field owned by Boaz. He was a relative of Naomi's husband Elimelech, as well as a rich and important man. When Boaz left Bethlehem and went out to his field, he said to the harvest workers, "The Lord bless you." They replied, and may the Lord bless you. Then Boaz asked the man in charge of the harvest workers, Who is that young woman? The man answered, She is the one who came back from Moab with Naomi. She asked if she could pick up grain left by the harvest workers, and she has been working all morning without a moment's rest. Boaz went over to Ruth and said, I think it would be best for you not to pick up grain in anyone else's field. Stay here with the women and follow along behind them as they gather up what the men have cut. I have warned the men not to bother you, and whenever you are thirsty, you can drink from the water jars they have filled. Ruth bowed down to the ground and said, You know I come from another country. Why are you so good to me? Boaz answered, I've heard how you've helped your mother-in-law ever since your husband died. You even left your own father and mother to come and live in a foreign land among people you don't know. I pray that the Lord God of Israel will reward you for what you have done. And now that you have come to him for protection, I pray that he will bless you. Ruth replied, Sir, it's good of you to speak kindly to me and make me feel so welcome. I'm not even one of your servants. At mealtime, Boaz said to Ruth, Come, eat with us. Have some bread and dip it in the sauce. Right away she sat down with the workers, and Boaz handed her some roasted grain. Ruth ate all she wanted and had some left over. When Ruth got up to start picking up grain, Boaz told his men, Don't stop her. Even if she picks up grain from where it is stacked. Be sure to pull out some stalks of grain from the bundles and leave them on the ground for her, and don't speak harshly to her. Ruth worked in the field until evening. Then, after she had pounded the grain off the stalks, she had a large basket full of grain. She took the grain to town and showed Naomi